Mr. Mann, Reel 17. Can we go back to the Anzio period, Mr. Mann? And you did have some entries in your diary which may be of interest. Would you like to read them?
Yes, there's bits here. We've come out of action on this occasion. We've gone to an assembly point. And we all thought, like, where are we going this time? Are we going home? What's in store now? Well, we got onto a boat. And it was a wet day and put to sea at night time. And the next morning we landed south of Rome, which I've got as Anzio, but it was Anzio. There we were jerry bombed and machine gunned us. Also, it was a very flat country. Tanks and aircraft. This is a hot place, but the weather isn't. Artillery bad. The Germans dive bombed us, machine guns, mortars, tanks, airplanes, big guns. This is getting a proper hell on earth. Still shelling. Jerry broke through our lines. This is in your writing. Oh, will this shelling and bombing and machine gun ever cease? Now it is raining heavy. We bombed a German K-800. This is definitely a hot spot. Still plenty of noise. Jerry patrols active. Charlie Curry missing. A slight Jerry counterattack. We are still okay. Then take all the machine gun position. The piece of shrapnel got through the end of the barrel. Make it dangerous. Don't fire it. We'd have plenty of grenades. A new barrel came up, that was in February. The barrel came up and the gunfire okay. We were shelled by our own Royal Artillery firing on our positions. Said my prayer and shut my eyes, kept low. Saw the Germans breaking a spandar machine gun nest. The artillery finished the job and the jerrys. A smoke screen come over. Germans using heavy mortars. Usual frontline activities. Plenty of sniping. Still on the machine gun post. One thing. Plenty to eat, but little burners. That was to warm the food up with, which was only methylated spirit burners. Thank God we come out of the line. On the way out, the German tank opened up on us. German aircraft came over, part of a wing was shot away, packed all our kit. Where are we going, everybody asked. Got on the boat, Jerry shelled us, went about a mile out to sea. Still on the boat, landed during the night, 2 p.m.
What date were you on that boat,
date? The beginning of March. Yeah. March the 5th, I've actually got that. When we got on the boat from Anzio.
And at that point, you were eventually pulled out, of course.
That's right, we're out of the line.
Mm-hmm. When you were in all this fighting and shelling in the Anzio sector, were any men awarded medals for particular bravery in your unit?
I know there was one lad who was doing sniping. I can't remember his name, but he got the MM. And I remember it was Ginger Head. I can't remember his name. He'll be getting the MM. And there's one of the officers, he got a medal. It wasn't the VC, but it was somewhat in the standard. That's the only two that I can bring to mind. Mm-hmm. I think myself, everybody deserves a medal. But it didn't happen. No, I wouldn't say there was any really outstanding action taken there. But at the same time, I couldn't see everybody there, but there was actions taken, and as I said, well, probably everybody would have deserved a medal. We were all in the thick of it, as it were. What I didn't realise was in Anzio for such a short a time until recapping through this diary. But there wasn't a lot of movement. I should think the area that we covered there from where we initially landed and then got this uprising of where there was a German flyover to the railway, going across the road through the stump corner, we used to call it. That would be about 10 to 11 miles from the beach head. And from there, I don't think we advanced more than 2 miles ahead of that before eventually starting and pulled out. That was from the bodies.
The Americans were close to you, weren't they?
Yes. As I said, one morning on scan two, when it was dawn was coming through, and they remember over to the right flank, seeing this party, we saw them, now we didn't know who at first, we thought they were Germans. We didn't open up at that stage, but when it came a bit later, it was obvious that were Americans, and they'd come up for support.
Did you come into contact with them?
Oh, yes.
How did you find them?
Oh, I found them quite friendly. We used to like getting with them, especially when you were out of the line, because the rations they got were far so few. So what we got, K rations. There was an American sergeant, and I also remember him during conversation. He says, I feel sorry for you guys. He says, you know, the Americans, he says, they look after their troops and soldiers. That. He says, but in my estimation, from what I've seen coming up from Italy, he says, you guys, he says, you just used. Awesome, it's an awesome in the mind. And that, I think is maybe true. I mentioned it now, but I did put in to see if I was eligible for a war pension, and lots of money was being available according to papers. And I've attributed to my arthritis and rheumatics and that too, the conditions which we've had to live under in Italy during that stay. And the reply that I got from the pension scheme was that they didn't think that had affected my health in any way. I couldn't say where a life that I've had as a civilian or after the war could have attributed to it, because it never really come to that. But that's been the wayside now. But that was what reminds me about this American saying, you're there, he says, you were just used. Mm. Anyhow, apart from that on the Anzioli, I know when we did get out of the lines and back to the AS, and a jeep came up, and I think it was actually the quartermaster who was in it, and they had a dead body in the back which had picked up, and he thought it was one of ours. It was a German soldier put in the back. Shortly after that, the driver of that jeep, I remember, he was killed when the quartermaster had to go up and make contact with the troops who had taken over for us, for some reason, I don't know what for. But during that, the driver was killed by shrapnel, and the officer came through all right. In later years, Manley, they called him, I can remember that name, Manley. But just surely got through the war right, and in his later years, in his 60s, maybe 70, he had both legs on the table. Now, that wasn't through the war, but it just shows what can happen to people. And also, I think that was it, as I say, but...
You were under, as you say, pretty static and under considerable shell, mortar and bomb raining down on you. Yeah. Did the men hold there? Was the spirit still high within the unit?
Well, I would say the morale had gone down a bit, because even though we're sort of far enough apart, we did get to know that some of the other companies had been taken prisoner, and that there'd been heavy casualties which we couldn't actually explain. And I think that was a bit racist, and we were never so much relieved, I don't think, because when the Green Howards came up to relieve us, we must have been a bit under the weather, because even myself, I remember the two Green Howards come up to take over our slip trench. And I happened to tell them that there was some, when the light, they couldn't see at that time during the night. I said, when it gets a bit light, you'll see two German laid in front of you, which would only be a matter of about, 20 feet, something like that, six or 7 yards in front was two of theirs. And one of them says, and this chap said, he says, oh, I think you're like a scared. For some reason he said that. And I thought, well, if you've been here what we've been through for the last few days, you might have a different opinion to him. I thought this was insane. But it's funny because when we got back, before we actually moved off the beachhead, we did learn that this Green Howard company had taken over us. It had been taken prisoner. So, I wonder how he felt. And the Green Howard, of course, which is Richmond, Yorkshire, their barracks. I often wonder who he was. He might end up lifting Downs and throw them all off. Then again, it was not. It's just passing thoughts on ground, you know, about it.
Can I move you forward now to the Germano position again? We have talked briefly about it. What was the feature of Germano? What was it like as you approached it? Where was it, in effect?
Well, I remember the starting point was from a village at the bottom. And there were the usual bits of mud and that to get through. And then the Germans had pulled back up to the higher ground of Germano itself. And we approached it like through brushland and that. Not forest land, but brushland. And it was more or less a case of more sniping than anything, and keeping under cover. If I remember right, it was a case of a section at a time would advance. And if it got to a bit forward position, then another one would come up alongside and so on. Till eventually we got to the edge of this flat piece which I referred to previously, and that was more or less static. It was a case of keeping under cover. You could occasionally maybe get a snipe, but if you didn't, you got a chance of being sniped. But that supplies would come up during the night, which wasn't bad up to the ridge. We'd get through there, right? There was no German counterattacks there, except the machine guns coming from the Germans.
Did you come across German tanks?
The tanks were dug in, but of course we had nothing really with us at that time to destroy them. Even then, if you mentioned the Fiat and that, which was like a tin weapon, or as we used to call the stem gun, a tin weapon. But tanks were firing at us before we got up to this first part of the flat bit that is over there.
But they were dug in, you say?
They were dug in, yes. It was quite alarming from what I can remember of them.
Had you lost heavily again, casualties, as you got to that position?
Yes, we did. See, when we went in there, it was with the Royal Artillery, with all due respect to them. They hadn't fully been trained as infantrymen. Even from Egypt, where we were made up to strength with them, the only sort of infantry work was done by bits of manoeuvres out in the desert and sand. That wasn't the sort of terrain in which Germano was in. The sand was flat and that was, when you looked at it, it was back to your hilly and mountainous district. But they did suffer there after Germano.
And it must have been extremely difficult for these artillerymen, as you quite rightly say. Did they break down? Did they panic at all under these strange conditions for them?
I think it was because for some it must have been the first time actually in the line. I mean, there could have been an action before the Royal Artillery, but that would be a way back. But getting up to the line and on your feet and that, and sort of in sight of the enemy, as it were. I don't know what some of the thoughts must have been. Maybe the thought till they get there, it won't be bad, it's infantry and that, but it's different from Royal Artillery, where they could do the bigger guns and maybe have the dugouts further back, where they could hide from shelling. At least they had a bit of cover. And during the spells, of course, there was no fear of a German patrol coming through to their positions. I don't think that they'd enjoy it. I had a remark from where they wished they were back with the Royal Artillery, but of course there was no option then. The Chris couldn't go back. You just have to put up with it. Take the bad with the bad.
There must have been a great reluctance in them to go forward into this fire, into this situation.
Oh, yeah.
And that may have affected the spirit of the battalion as an attacking force.
It's funny thinking that, because when you got up there, and even with shelling and that, you always said, like, that if you were injured by a shell or killed by a shell, you would never hear that shell coming. It would arrive before you heard the sound coming. And to be quite honest with you, if there was shelling about the first opportunity, I was laid flat down on my face. I don't mind admitting it. And yet there were people who wouldn't get down. They would just keep up, you know, and, you know, get down a minute, so you just keep up. And so we got, by the time I got up again, we'll say, they were still on the feet. So, as I say, I was no hero. Right, it was just like self-preservation, I think, when you used to get down to that. There was one chap come from the Royal Artillery, they called him Benson. He lived up a little village outside Bishop Auckland. And he actually got put on as a stretcher bearer. I wasn't a stretcher bearer myself, but the driver at this time. But I did get to know him and got Polly. But at the same time, he must have been about 10 or 15 years older than me. I was really surprised that they put him into the infantry. Because they used to say if you were 39 or above, you weren't able for infantry duties. And also, depending on your eyesight and as to whether you had false teeth, you wouldn't go in for it. Anyhow, this Benson, I think he had his own teeth. He was a pitman, he'd been a pitman this day. But he didn't like for all he was in the medical section, he didn't like being with the infantry. No. Benson.
Can we come back now to Pye Forces, which is where we finished the last tape. And you were talking about the fact that you were in Tehran, basically guarding and parading and that kind of duties.
What, to get the Pye Force, of course, were after the Jemena.
Yes.
One thing which maybe I should put in here is that after Jemena, the brigade went down, the brigade finished the village itself. Now, I put it down as September the 26th, or 25th of September, the Oxford Bucks, after that action, was disbanded.
Yes, we've got that on the tape. We have filled that period of time. Yes, that's right. And we've got all that in. It's coming into to Pye Force, where we finished last time.
Right.
Now, what were you doing? I know you've mentioned guards and so. What was the British Army doing in Persia?
Well, that used to be in connection with supplies coming down from Russia to the Middle East. That was the origin of it. And the Russian convoys, they'll come down. But the time when I got up into Persia, I'd only been there for 5 weeks when the hostilities ceased. So, of course, there was less movement and fuel supplies going through that area. But I remember Russian trucks used to come through, and the Russian army obviously was different from the British army. But if a Russian driver had an accident, he could very nearly be shot. But he was having an accident with a truck. So that is for me at that time. But really, I suppose I could class it as a holiday being in Persia, apart from the patrol, when it wasn't against the enemy, but patrolling along the railway lines and guarding the water tower at a place called the Nud before we moved up into Tehran. But it was easy going, and even in Tehran itself, most of our days, I think, were after half a day on duty, we could go into Tehran itself. from the days. So it was really a bit of a holiday.
How did you get on with the native Persians, or Iranians as they are now?
Well, I suppose they were a different kettle of fish in those days. In Tehran itself, even then, they used to have public hangings in the street and executions from like big poles up in the street with lamps on and that, and they were even hung from there, which was all done during it. There used to be a few Russians in Tehran, and the Americans. The Americans, they were about a couple of miles from where we were, in a camp near us, the race course, horse race course, and they would invite us over to their camp for evening meals, so social meeting as it were, which was very nice, but they always did very well for us. We used to come back loaded with cigarettes and chocolate and all, which we were real luxuries for us, which we hadn't enjoyed. Getting back to where they said the Americans ever looked after.
Were there any problems in the city whilst you were there that you got involved in?
Not in Tehran, no. No, I think the only problems there was when the bits of eruption started again with the lads after drinks in cabarets and cafes and what have we got there. The military police would come in, sort of job out, take them away. They managed to catch the rest of us, and we were in once, and there was no roof, but it was like an open garden with a wall around it, maybe about 9 foot. When the eruption started, an hour up on top of the table, and over a wall, absolutely. And another funny thing in Tehran was, which I can remember, went out one night to the lads who were drinking vodka, and were in, it was a biggish house come, equivalent to a pub or something, you could say. And we drank this vodka this night, and we were on the first floor, and I was told afterwards, which I don't recall myself, that we'd been drinking, and for some reason I got up in this room and ran to the balcony that was like French windows to a balcony, they say, and I jumped from there down onto the lawn below, and I do not remember a single thing about it. So that's what vodka could do for you. No, it was nice to be up in Persia, away from the hostilities and that, but at the same time there was that dragging feeling that I wish we could go home and get it home again.
How did you commemorate or celebrate the end of the war in Europe, which would be shortly after you got there?
Well, the only celebration, I think we weren't sort of given anything to celebrate with. It was just your own group or your pals and that, and had drinks there. And we used to think, oh, well, they're looking an eagle home than what we are. Even Continental was different from being out amongst the sand and the muck and all that in that area. And whilst we were like, naturally, we were all glad the war had ended. But there's still that one, when are we going home? You used to keep asking there, but you never got a firm answer or anything like that. Until eventually you just got that we were on the move from Tehran back down to the Middle East.
Was there any ceremonial parade organised for the end of the war?
Not when we were. No. Apparently in Italy going back with the Durhams, which in one way, also regret that they haven't been parted from the Durham, but that's gone by now, that's history. But they had parades, and then of course they went to Greece, and they had one or two photocopies of what had been a postcard with these parades and that. They used to come up there. But for us in Persia, well, you were... All right, they used to call it bull and that, the equipment, we always had to be up to the mark. And as I said, tent ropes, they had to be whitewashed and the stones around them, and your equipment had to be spotless. And you were on parade at that inspection, and virtually that was it. would have to be very important if you were off duty and, say, couldn't get into Tehran. You were in the camp and it was talking or writing away home or maybe reminiscing a bit. Because this second battalion, Royal Sussex, where I was with then, they hadn't been in the actions. From what I gathered from them, they'd made some mistake in North Africa, and then after this mistake, they've been posted up to Persia. But that's more a hearsay, if you have an account from that. That's what I was told. In some cases, they used to call Persia like a punishment station. But why I ended up there, I don't know. But there was a transfer of personnel, and apparently for the number of us that had gone up to Persia, which wasn't a lot, so it was about 20 or so of us, I think, and I think it had been exchanged for 20 of the Sussex regiment to go over to Italy. And from correspondence that eventually come back, although it was only 5 weeks, I said that they'd got to Italy, some of these transferred personnel, and written back with being in action, and some of them had lost their lives. Now, if they'd been left up in Persia, that there's something wrong there. So I was thankful there again, and said to people, saying God moves in mysterious ways, and they think that's how it would help me. So maybe I often think more to that. Maybe just put it to me that the transfer I had from different units ended up eventually with going back to Italy again, and that's where I met my wife. And had it not been for these different transfers and that would never have happened, because it would never have got back to Italy's operation.
When did you move from Persia?
We moved from Persia down to, and I think it must have been round about November time, and because it was in May when the hostilities ceased, and I think we just drifted about in this Tehran area, and it must have been about October, November. We moved down to the Middle East again, and we were in Port Tufik, which is quite close to Fort Said, and we're in camp there. And what duties we had there was along the banks of the Suez Canal, and it was to stop any infiltration or refugees or non-Egyptians crossing the Suez Canal. That was our duties there. And it got to January, I remember. And then in January, I was selected to come home on Leah for a month. So that was it, like from Tehran down to the Middle East, duties along the Suez Canal, and then home on Leah, which was through the winter time. And all the time, I was staff stiff from North Country back there. Night time, it was hot out in the North Country.
How did you get from Egypt to home?
We ended up at Marseille in France.
Was that by boat or air?
By boat from Port Noir, Port Said, or by boat to Marseille, and then from there by train to a French port, I think it would be Calais, and we did go across to Dover, and then from Dover up eventually to Darlington by train. I remember went through the Bay of Biscay, and they actually battened us down in the boat. All hatches were closed, joined to the rough weather. And the medical officer, he said that even the bottles of medicine on the racks and that, some of them had fallen out. They'd never known it'd been such a rough trip.